1116 SEN. This is The Grippers with Simon Helmut and Braden Ingram.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of The Grippers. Cracking show we've got for you today. I'm your host, Braden Ingram. Really looking forward to talking plenty of cricket issues. And joining me is my co-host, the assistant coach of the Hobart Hurricanes. He's all over the world. He coaches a number of sides. It's a good afternoon to Simon Helmut. Mate, how are you going?
Very good, Braden. Yes, get on the cane train this year. We'll talk more things T20 when we get closer to December. But another fantastic week of cricket, and I'm sure we'll find out all the ins and outs, all the happenings of the Matador Cup. But fantastic news, the CA11. Now, you bagged him last week. You gave him a hard time. I passed that information on to Troy Cawley, who I spoke to later on in the week. And, mate, they got up and they had a win against the Tassie boys.
Yeah, it was a close game. I was watching it wasn't televised, but I was watching the scorecard while I was working, and it was a decent total they posted. Marcus Harris and Will Bozisto both posting half centuries.
Yeah.
And from there, it looked a bit close. I think they were about 8 or 9 down, Tasmania, about 30 to win. I thought, CA11 at home. And suddenly it's a 3-run victory. They really fought it out hard. It's good to see them get a victory after I smashed them last week.
Well, they copped an absolute flogging. It wasn't just from you. Plenty out there were saying, what's this CA11 all about? What's Australian cricket's future looking like when we're getting bowled out for 80-odd and 70-odd? Very disappointing. I spoke to my good mate Damien Wright, the assistant coach of the Tassie Tigers, the coach of the Hurricanes, and they were pretty disappointed to miss out on those points because Victoria and Tasmania had played them previously. In fact, both got double bonus points to get them.
Hey, I've got to mention that Trent Johnson, the coach of New South Wales, is going to join us pretty soon. He's also the former Irish captain, spent a lot of time there under Phil Simmons in the West Indies, so that's another interesting topic we'll explore with him. But I tell you what, WA, they needed that first win today, but a team that doesn't need too many wins because they've got all of them so far, 4 from 4. New South Wales, they're flying, and I suppose you consider they should be, given they've got a test squad pretty much playing for them.
They're sitting pretty up top, aren't they, the New South Wales Blues. 3 matches, 3 wins. Yes, star-studded lineup, but you're still going to get the job done. And if anything, 50-over cricket and 2020 cricket can bring sides back together a little, and there can be the upset, as we saw, with the CA11 and Tassie. But he's the super coach at the moment, Trent, so we look forward to speaking to him. 3 wins, 0 losses. We look forward to having a chat and talking all things, obviously, the Matador Cup. Yep. But, yeah, like you said, he's 10 years he had with the Irish team.
Performance that really impressed me last weekend, Alex Ross, South Australia, getting his side over the line, I think, against Queensland. They needed 15 off the last over. He got the experience. James Hope's bowling the last over. Small ground, I think it was at North Sydney again, but it was a brilliant 80-80 made, and good to see in those tough situations, not a player that's been around, not an experienced player, but someone standing up, a young player, getting that opportunity and taking the most and getting a win for his side.
Absolutely, Brado. He showed great composure. He has been around the system for a few years now. But look, you're up against James Hopes, the wily veteran who's been playing so well for so long.
Yep.
You probably would have backed him with 15 runs in the kick. However, North Sydney Oval, you just need to clear the inner ring, and the boundary's so tight. Believe me, one of the boundaries at North Sydney, I think it's at the far side, where the green grass and the hill is there, it's 19 metres from the inner circles. That's a 49-metre hit. That's like one of my chips.
Little top edge, and it'll pretty much go. I suppose James Hosts was maybe a little bit let down by his captain, Peter Forrest. A misfield there that went for 4. That kills you as a player sometimes. But before your life as a sole 2020 coach at the moment, of course, you had to spend a lot of time with the Bushrangers. And during the week, David Saker, the current coach of the Bushrangers, and Darren Lehman, the Australian coach, there's been a little bit of friction there, maybe. Basically, David Saker's come out and said that James Pattinson shouldn't play before Christmas due to his injury troubles. And basically, Darren Lehman sent around and said, no, well, you worry about the Victorian team, I'll worry about my team, I'll select. If someone's fit and they're right to go, I'll play them. And he's also, Darren Lehman, this is not particularly pleased about Peter Siddle being 12th man, given the fact that he played in a test just a couple of weeks ago. Have you been in a situation like this before? I mean, is it something that you encounter often as a state coach?
Look, I reckon there's always a bit of discussion between the state coach and CA selectors and the head coach of Australia on what the best plan is for the future. Both players have the best interest of Australian cricket. I think it was a bit of TV ringside. There's a bit of wrestling going on. I think both guys have had a conversation after to say, hey, ease up. Let's not play this out in the media. However, it was. And I don't mind that. Two guys pretty passionate about their country and their state. As you said, Sakes is saying, look, James needs some more time. Let's not rush him in. Buff's saying, mate, we're going to pick the team when and if we can. If he's fit, we're going to play him, and that's it. plenty of time Shippy and I would have had discussions about whether a player is ready. James was in that same situation last year with the Renegades. Yep. You know, was he going to play? Same thing with Peter Siddle. Peter Siddle was left out of the first test, so then he actually came back and came and played for the Renegades. That was a nice little swap comment at the end from Buff, wasn't it? Yeah. By the way, mate, concentrate on your team, and why aren't you playing Siddle? So the little backhander as he closed the door. But
he would have enjoyed that, I reckon. Just back to his old playing days. He doesn't mind a clip occasionally in his old Buff.
But look, people have been taking this story pretty seriously, Brado. From what I understand, those guys would have had a good old chat and say, hey, listen, come on, let's concentrate. We're on the same page. One of the Darren Lehman's greatest attributes since he's taken over as coach is his ability to work with all stakeholders. And that's the states, that's administration and players. He's been outstanding. And it's very unlike Buff to be as outspoken if he was really serious about it.
Would you say that's probably one of the harder parts of that job as well? And not to criticise anyone, but maybe in the past that hasn't been as well done and he's moved in and improved that relationship a lot?
Yeah, oh, no doubt. And the other bloke who gets whacked all the time is Pat Howard. Anytime something goes wrong in Australian cricket, it's Pat
Howard.
Blame
the rugby man.
Yeah, blame the rugby man because he's not a former player.
Yep.
James Sutherland probably gets his whack every now and again too when things aren't going from an administrative or, you know, the game's not projecting the way it's meant to be. But look, I think Sakes, he's going to do a great job for the Vics and hope he does a good job for the Renegades too.
Well, we're going to chat some international cricket fairly soon. But joining us now, Helmo, is the coach of the New South Wales Blues, former Ireland captain, Trent Johnson. Trent, thanks for joining us.
Guys, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Not a bad start for you. You've been in the coaching cape or the head coach for New South Wales a couple of months now, and you've already got 4 out of 4 wins. A pretty good start for yourself. How's it all going?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. You know, pre-season was quite tough for the boys. There's probably a few new things we brought in, a bit more structure and that sort of thing. So the guys are really in a good space at the moment. Certainly helps when you get the Aussie boys back, and you know those boys consist of Smith and Stark, and you know the likes of that. And you know Watto coming back to the team to strengthen it even more. So you know to have those guys in and amongst the group as well is very good. You know those guys are wanting to play for New South Wales, and you know getting out there and leading from the front. So and I think the big thing is that's bringing the rest of the group through with them. So you know the boys are in a good space, like I said, and you know, we've got 2 games to go before hopefully we get into finals. You know, we'll go from there.
Hey, TJ, it must have been tough for those boys who were originally selected, but then unfortunately had to miss out. What have you done with those guys, mate?
Yeah, well, those guys have been sort of preparing. We've sort of split the squad. Because we have such a big squad with so many Australian contracted players, and they're all around. So we have 30 guys around at the moment. So it is quite big. So we have the Matador squad training, and then we have the other guys training for club cricket and the Future League game that's coming up next week in South Australia. So their preparation has been sort of based around red ball work, where the Matador is obviously white ball. So, you know, quite lucky with the resources we have at New South Wales. We've got a couple of coaches to help run those other sessions when, you know, I'm unavailable or Jeff Lawson's unavailable. So, you know, we've got those guys covered and they've been sort of well looked after as well. So They'll get back and work with the club sides as well, so they won't be short of cricket at all.
And TJ, how have you found the transition from being an assistant coach to being the main man?
Yeah, I think it's different. A lot of things I didn't think about that you'd have to do, budgets and all this sort of funny stuff. Maths, I wasn't too bad at maths, but when you sort of got a figure to sort of keep under, it's you know, it's okay when you sort of give suggestions to the head coach. Let's do this. Let's do that. But then as those suggestions are coming through to you, you've got to try and find the money for it.
Yeah.
You know, I've been quite lucky with David Moore. He's very supportive as a high-performance manager. So, you know, it's okay. I'm still learning, very much learning. And, you know, I suppose with the experienced guys you have around the New South Wales setup, I've been quite lucky. You know, Ed Cowan's come back, which is a massive bonus for us. And he's been great for me. Moses, who I've worked a lot with in the pre-season, you know, potentially who I thought would be my captain for the whole season, but you know, he's been excellent. And you know, other senior guys around the group like Benny Rohrer and those guys, you know, bounce a lot of things off them. And you know, guys like Paul Chapman, who's the S&C here, who's been around the group now for probably about 6 years, knows the heartbeat of the players. So to have that sort of support and you know that sort of you know, I suppose support around me, I'm very lucky.
Trent, you mentioned that support. Having the test players come back, do you feel that you're learning as well, not just you mentioned Rohr and Eddie Cowan and the experienced players, but having these test players come back in, do you feel you're learning off them as well and it's actually creating a better team environment?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You don't really sort of, I wouldn't have had to probably do it anyway, you know, sort of sit down, structure and really have regimental plans and you know, structures how we're going to go about, you know, performing throughout this tournament and training and the build-up. You know, I think that having those experienced guys there, you know, you sort of, you know, I said in an interview that you sort of put out a few cones, warm them up and wang a few balls in the nets and away they go. You know, they sort of know their own game. They sort of know what they need to get up and, you know, like I said, you know, having the test captain back that wanting to play for New South Wales and, you know, having Starkey come back after, you know, we know about, you know, his ankle problems and still running in and celebrating wickets like he has been throughout the tournament. You know, it's really puts a smile on my face and makes me proud to sort of be coach of these guys that, you know, they're putting in 120%, you know.
Hey, just going back to your playing days and your years playing with Ireland, how long did you play with Ireland? And you're an unbelievable servant and had great success. And no doubt Ireland was the best associate country, you know, over that time. But have you taken much of your playing time with Ireland into your coaching? And yeah, how long did you play with them for?
Yeah, I went over there in 2004 and right. I was there for, played for 10 years. Played my last game in December 2013. It wasn't that long ago, but, you know, very proud and, you know, I'm very, very lucky to have that sort of 10-year experience. You know, I played half a dozen games for New South Wales and I was probably a little bit overawed and probably a bit young when I went and played in those years. And, you know, I probably didn't do myself justice. And to get another opportunity to play international cricket, I was very lucky. You know, I played in 5 World Cups. So to do that, you know, was a great achievement. And captain in one of those in 2007 was a massive honour. So, you know, I was very lucky to do that. And I suppose the person that I sort of would model myself on at the moment with my coaching would be the coach back in the early years of Ireland, Adrian Birrell, who's now assistant coach at South Africa. Mm. You know, he was very, very well structured, good communicator. You know, he was always sort of very, very well prepared. So, and that's the way I sort of like to go about my cricket. And that's probably the way I like to go about my coaching. So, I still talk to AD quite a fair bit and bounce a lot of things off him. So, you know, he was my coach there for 3 or 4 years and, you know, just learned off him and stayed in contact. So he would be someone that I'd sort of, he'd be my sort of go-to man in that regard. But, yeah, you know, very lucky to play in those World Cups and to represent Ireland. And we, like you said, we were quite successful during that period. And, you know, they recently beat Zimbabwe in an ODI. So the boys are still going strong. So, it's pretty good to see.
Trent, you speak of that strength of Ireland. Made it a very strong performance during the World Cup this year. How much does it hurt you personally to feel that it's a lot more difficult now for associate nations to make it into the World Cup coming into 2019?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I think you can look at it two ways. It is difficult and there isn't a sort of a clear pathway, but, you know, there is another way they can get through. You know, the top 8 qualify and then rank 9th and 10th in the ODI world and then play off against, I think, 6 associates. So there'd be 2 groups of 4. So there is still a pathway through for them. And, you know, I've gone on record saying that I think they're good enough to get through that pathway. Obviously, you would prefer to do it in an easier way and to get into another World Cup, especially with it being in England, and the support you'd have there would be amazing. So, but, you know, with them going over to Zimbabwe and beating them only a few days ago, we've got good results in Bangladesh and against Bangladesh. So, you know, I certainly don't see any reason why we can't sort of get through that harder way that's been put up against us. And, you know, I think that we've just got to deal with that now, and Ireland's got to deal with that now and move on and, you know, just get themselves as well prepared as possible for that tournament because, you know, if they play good cricket, you know, they can beat any team going into that World Cup in 2019 if they make it.
TJ, coaching the New South Wales team is a great responsibility and many people have said that, you know, it's the second best team in the country outside Australia. Is there extra pressures on your coaching the Blues or have you just taken in your stride?
I don't sort of put any pressure on myself. You know, obviously I've got great support around me. I've got a good team. So it's a matter of me just providing the structures, the training environment that will make those guys grow and make those guys want to turn up and play cricket with a smile on their face. I think that, you know, when the New South Wales teams are doing well, they're a happy team. They're playing good, positive cricket. And that's all I wanted to do when I was a player. And, my playing days, I've tried to mimic them sort of in my coaching. So I've tried to be, you know, aggressive. You know, I want to sort of win at every opportunity. And, you know, I learned that playing for New South Wales and, you know, being a part of the setup and that sort of thing here. So, you know, I think that if you can keep these guys happy and keep them motivated and keep wanting them to be better and all that sort of stuff, you know, you're on a pretty good course to success. And, you know, I'm not really worried about what's happened before. I know that if I can get that sort of, I suppose, those ingredients right, then, you know, I think trophies have come our way because of the depth and talent that we have here. So, you know, we're in a pretty good place in this competition at the moment, the Matador. So, you know, if we can keep playing the cricket we're playing, I still think we've probably got 10, 15% better improvement in us. And, you know, we spoke about that at the end of the last game. So, you know, I think that if we can achieve that, that we're going to go a long way to sort of, you know, bringing back that one-day trophy that hasn't been here for 10 years. Mm.
Speaking to Trent Johnston, the coach of New South Wales Blues. Trent, Ed Cowan moved back from Tasmania, originally played for New South Wales, made 100 just a few days ago in the Matador One Day Cup. How far away do you feel he is for a test recall, given the fluid situation at the top of the order for Australia at the moment? And how is his mindset? I mean, is it he's played for Australia for already? Is there an absolute drive to get there? Or is it, if it comes, great, otherwise I'll just keep performing for New South Wales?
Oh, listen, he's in a great space. He's enjoying his cricket. He's loving being home, his family near him, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, Helmo will tell you that if you have that sort of environment around you, that you're going to play some good cricket. And, you know, Ed's, you know, he's an accomplished player for both New South Wales, Tasmania and Australia. He's represented county teams over in England. So he's the wealth of experience. He's just going to get out there and play his best cricket. And I think what future honours come his way. But, you know, he's certainly in a great place at this time. And that, you mentioned about that 100. It was an outstanding 100 on a slow wicket, slow outfield that, you know, probably on a North Sydney, he's probably getting 160, 170 there. So, you know, and he really set up that game for us. And, you know, he's been the one guy all sort of pre-season that has been starting well and just probably had one poor shot in innings and he's got out. And he didn't do that last game. And just with finished training here now, and he was probably the last one to leave there hitting balls. So he's still striving to get better. And, you know, I think, you know, Ed's a pretty intelligent guy, so he can see what's going on at the top of the order. And for me, I think he'd be a perfect foil for Warner to go 1 and 2 heading into the summer.
Really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. Good luck for the rest of the Matador Cup. You're looking in pretty good shape there and for the rest of the season as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Great to chat with New South Wales Blues coach Trent Johnston. He's an impressive figure, isn't he, Helmer? I mean, he's gone to Ireland, originally started in state cricket for New South Wales, a captain in Ireland, very strong over there in a World Cup, took them to, I think, their first World Cup win in 07. Yeah. And then he's come back and suddenly he's coach of New South Wales. He was an assistant under Trevor Bayliss before he was given the England job, and now he's got one of the best state sides going around.
Doing a great job, terrific fella, and very enthusiastic, very different to TB.
Yeah.
It was interesting what he was saying. He's very organised, where TB's a bit more open, a bit more open planning going on, but it certainly worked for him. But I wish TJ very well.
Exactly. He's done well so far. We'll see how he goes in the Matador One Day Cup and the rest of the season as well. Now, plenty of international.
That's where they're playing cricket, India. Indoor.
Yes.
That's what the place is called, indoor.
Let's start off there then. Let's start off with South Africa and India.
I haven't heard of that place. I've been to India a few times. No. I've never heard of, is it Indore?
Indore. I think it's Indore. I think. Okay. We had to get the maps out on Google just to see exactly where it was. Central India is where it was. Okay. But really good game last night. I think it was the second game in the ODI series.
Fantastic.
And really close. Mahendra Singh Dhoni didn't have a great start in the first ODI. They needed 11, I think, off the last over, and they couldn't get the job done.
No, he messed it up.
And then this time, end of the innings, really solid 92 not out, and then they held them off at the end. Big fan of MS's innings last night?
Oh, big fan of MS. And I tell you what, there's a billion Indian spectators who are a fan of MS. Yeah. 5 dot balls in the last over last night, but they were 9 down. Mowat was on strike. So he waited to that very last ball and hit a 6. He was on 86 before that over, obviously finished on 92 not out. Indians got up. But I was flicking through Foxtel last night, Brado, and I see you know, a full house at Indore in India. Crowd going absolutely crazy. I mean, yep. Why wouldn't you? You've got Dhoni out there, you've got De Villiers, two of the best short version players, let alone long version players in the world. Then I flick over to the other channel, and there's Pakistan and England playing in the desert, and it looked like a desert. Yeah, the ground was nice and green. The wicket was good.
More supporters at North Sydney Oval?
More supporters at Jack's Under 12s at Surrey Hills last week. Mate, and it got me thinking. It got me thinking about Test match cricket. When T20 arrived and started getting popular, we all started saying, look, this one-day format, it's gone to pieces.
Yep.
We had a wonderful World Cup in Australia and New Zealand that really boosted that. We know England, Australia and India still have a lot of following when it comes to one-day cricket. But I look at our test-playing nations. Australia, India, England, South Africa, New Zealand, all in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
Albeit not huge crowds when South Africa and New Zealand play. But Sri Lanka, always political issues, always problems. West Indies, well, they owe India $42 million at the moment. There's an invoice on the desk there.
That's not what you want to see in the mail, is it? Oh no.
What do we owe? $42 million. And then they just sacked their coach, who's been for breach of comment or whatever, you know, saying that selection Simmons, process yep. wasn't right, and Phil Simmons. Bangladesh, you can't go there and play. The Aussies have pulled out. Well, we can't play in Pakistan. That's why we're playing in the desert over in UAE. And no one wants to go to Zimbabwe. So four out of our top 10 playing nations are in some strife. I think, Brado, that the Test match game is under yep. more threat than the one-day game right now. Now, some people is scoffing in their scone or a cup of tea and saying, come on, you know, this game's been going on for 150 years. No yep. way that can die. But there's less people watching it and actually less people going to it. I think that's a real concern.
I think that was the concern maybe before the World Cup as well, or maybe the last couple of years, that Test cricket was also an issue. But then when you come out and you have an Ashes and you have a couple of really good series that are tied, and then it becomes the concern for the one-day game when you see 20,000 people rocking up to the MCG for Australia and England for Australia and India
yep.
before the World Cup, and then you get to the World Cup and it's amazing. When cricket means something, i.e. the Ashes, a big series, Australia and India, you get crowds. But when there's no context, which we see quite often, there's just nothing there. I mean, some of my friends over in England who I met, the tour over there, they're saying that there's just no publicity at all for this England tour. And that's partially because it's on pay TV, which doesn't yep. help. But also, once the Ashes goes out of town, there's the blinkers are on. If it's not right in front, I think, of some cricketing publics, it's just non-existent. And I suppose that's the problem for the game as well. It also doesn't help when you've got the new initiation where you've got Australia, England and India taking 80% of cricket's profits. I mean, that's a completely different issue as well.
Another discussion point.
For another time and about three shows as well to fit it all in. But I understand what you're saying. And it's a shame as well, because Pakistan, they are at the story of world cricket, I think, at the moment. Never mind, you've got the islands, you've got your associates coming up, and Australia's come back, and New Zealand's rise as well. But Pakistan, in the last 12 months, at home when they play in the UAE, there's just been some really impressive players. I mean, you look at Hafiz, who made 100 the other day, he's 34. Malik hasn't played for 5 years, comes out and makes something like 245. And that, by the way, 245, he's the first man in Test history to make that score.
I heard that. Unbelievable. The first time. I think there's one other score over 200.
Between 0 and 250 of 229 and 238 that have never been scored in Tests.
Wow. Okay.
So they're the only two scores.
He's probably got another innings. Yeah. He'll get that next time.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have to flat track. You know, Yunus Khan's 37. Misbah, their captain's 41. It's great to see. There's just no one knows about it unless you're an absolute cricket tragic. And I suppose that's the shame. But when you've got your four cricketing nations who you can't go to, and you've got another couple in financial trouble, and you've got possibly an ICC that's looking to reduce. Yes. Basically, you know, it is the only sport in the world where the governing body appears to be trying to actually condense the sport. Now, I don't want to get you into trouble here, so this can be all me.
No, you're not getting into trouble at all. But I think you talked about the ICC, and I think they're now looking at the Future Tours program, and they're going to look at how effective or how popular are the bilateral series, and do we have to have a World Cup of Test matches? Do we have to have a system in place which is strong enough, which is fair, which is equitable, where you play each other enough times to find out who is the champion team in Test match cricket? Because up until now, there's been a panel that's decided who's going to play where and when. Obviously, the big fish get the big games and the big ticket items, but we're seeing so many people drop off actually watching the game. But sadly, there's nothing worse than watching a game of cricket. I mean, it was great last night. You saw the desert in the foreground. I thought I was watching the golf. And then you saw the green, you know, the grassy hill. There's a wicket there with a few players.
It's not much else.
There wasn't much else being watched, mate.
We've got to look towards the day-night test as well. We've got completely out of our realm here. We've gone from talking to international cricket to the struggles of the game, the Matador One Day Cup. We've covered everything today, mate. Looking forward to next week. The Matador One Day Cup will certainly be towards its end point. And then we'll look towards the international summer cricket. Helmo, thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
This has been The Grippers. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll speak to you next week.